This is Sensei from the Guild Massively Overpowered, and you are listening to Guildcast.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 25th episode of Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean, and with me once again is Ruby. How are you doing,
hey,
Ruby?
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. I'm good. We've taken a break, a little break there for a week, because there was absolutely no news at all. And actually, this week, there's not anything huge, but we did do an interview with ArenaNet at Massively, and they revealed some little tidbits on some things that we wanted to talk about in this episode. So I think, you know, we said last week that we would, or at least I said on the blog, that we would at least make an episode this week, even if there was no news, because we do have kind of a, you know, few emails to read and get through those. And plus, we just love talking about Guild Wars, right?
Yeah, definitely. So, and then we got this interview, and that made it even better.
Yeah, exactly. It's something to talk about, at least to speculate. I mean, we love to speculate. And actually, I love the way that when we do speculate, we get a lot of comments and a lot of emails that are like, hey, this is, you know, I think that's a great idea, but this is what I think, and, you know, kind of the other side of things. And
I love that.
Yeah, me too. So, I guess, I mean, what have you been up to in Guild Wars this last week? Anything exciting?
Oh my gosh, last night was so cool. Did you watch it all?
Oh, the streaming event. No, I didn't.
Yeah, okay, we did. The Massively Guild plays Guild Wars every night, every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern. And I've been wanting to start live streaming it for a while. So we did that last night during Thunderhead Keep. And it was so much fun. It was just Thunderhead Keep normal mode. Mm-hmm. But, you know, most of the people, we had a good mix of veteran players and newer players. Mm-hmm. So there was just, there was a lot of discussion about, you know, oh, remember when this used to be hard?
Oh, yeah.
And but the best part was that it was so easy for most of, I mean, we had a Signet of Spirits writ.
Yeah.
So, you know, most of us, we just sat around and picked our noses. No, but our SOS writ, at one point he went out of the compound. We were camping the king because we were, you know, this stuff, some of them are like level 16 and we can just take them out as they come. So we were kind of sitting around in between, you know, the big waves of two. Mm-hmm. Our Signet of Spirits writ amused himself by going outside of the compound and kind of walking around.
Oh, nice.
And then one of our other people, he was passing the time by playing with the firing levers on the balustrade.
Yeah.
He hit the SOS writ.
Oh, jeez.
And the guy got down to, the guy was looking around going, what is hitting me? And he literally got down to like 100 health.
Wow.
Before he was like, wait a minute, that's you. This is friendly fire. Could you stop that? So that was actually a lot of fun. We just had fun goofing around and being silly. And
that's cool.
The White Mantle came running in, and they were like level 16. And you can hear on the stream one of our team members is going, look at that, it's adorable. So it was actually a blast. We had so much fun.
That's cool.
And I think we're definitely going to do it again in the coming Thursdays.
That's always one of the missions where, you know, when you've been playing it for a few years and then you go and you're like, man, I remember when this used to be the kind of bottleneck, you know, for the storyline. Everybody would sit at Thunderhead Keep going, oh, I need that mission. I need to complete it. And now, actually, I was in a guild for a while there, and we would do Thunderhead Keep at least once a week just to get, you know, other people through it. And and those of us who would go through it every week would just be like, okay, this is going to happen in 3 seconds. Okay, now this is going to happen. You know, it's just like a script almost. And it's always fun. I love that mission.
It is. You know, we got a big kick out of, and I really think this is why the White Mantle failed, how they're sending everybody in like two at a time.
Oh.
Instead of just, you know, overwhelming us with their numbers.
Yeah, don't tell them that strategy, though, because they might win. Sometime.
Well, they do that, too, in Battle of Lion's Arch. Have you finished War in Krita?
No, I haven't. Huh.
Okay, well, the end is Battle of Lion's Arch, and it actually is pretty difficult, but there, for the longest time, you look outside, and there have got to be, like, 100 mantle. and they're hanging out outside the gates, screaming about how awesome they are, and they send people in like 6 and 7 at a time.
Hmm.
So you wipe them out, and then you go back to waiting. But the other half of this is that, you know, it's a siege. They're, the whole storyline is leading up to how, oh my gosh, the Mantle are coming. They've been amassing their forces, and here they come. And they're coming to lay siege to Lion's Arch. Salma is like, okay, they're here. Open the gates. And the first time we did that, I did that with a guild member, and he's like screaming in local, this is not how a siege works. You are the worst queen ever. Because she's just standing back there going, let him in.
Let's see what they want. They might be friendly.
Yeah. And then they just stand up there shouting at us for, I don't even know, it's the longest time, but they send in very small waves for the longest time. Yeah. And the other 100, instead of coming through the gates that we have so kindly opened for them, I mean, we'd be toast if they all came in at once, but they never quite think of that.
It's like in those karate movies when, you know, there's like one guy at a time, but they're all surrounding the dude, and like he's able to be. It's like, just if like, all of you rush at once, you'll get him.
But it just never occurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're very polite waiting. We've decided that's what the confessor's orders say. Go in 5 at a time.
Oh, yeah. Well, there you go. I mean, it's always upper management, you know.
They it is, them, I'm so. Telling you. So anyway, that was streaming Guild Wars last night. It was probably the highlight of my gaming week. We had a ball.
Cool. I'm glad to hear that that's going so well, because we, you know, we plan to do that a lot.
So. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And the Massively Guild is, I'm actually having to kick inactives to make room. The Massively Guild is at 95 people right now.
Cool.
Yeah, and most of them have been active, like, in the past week. It's exciting.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool.
So that was, like, an extremely long story. What have you been playing? Sorry.
I really haven't been playing much of anything. I know I talked about Fable 3 last time, and actually we have an email about that, because I mentioned that I would love to see a Fable MMO, and someone wrote in about that and said that they do not want to see a Fable MMO. So we're actually going to read that a little bit later. But, Fable 3, been playing Minecraft like heck. I mean, this is, again, here we are mentioning Minecraft again, but been playing on a multiplayer server. Actually, you know, Tiger Feet, who did the intro for us a few times, she wrote in a lot, like, toward the early days of Guildcast, and yeah. She is our neighbor in Minecraft. I mean, we have it set up on this multiplayer server, and there are a couple people kind of right next to each other. And Hunter from Hunter's Insight, who does the Hunter's Insight blog about Guild Wars, he's in there too. So it's actually kind of cool. It's like a couple, you know, Guild Wars fanatics all in there playing Minecraft together. Yeah. So,
and actually, I like that we have this little, like, podcaster's corner over there with all of our little houses near each other.
Yeah. I really, I'm just digging the heck out of that game. I mean, it's no Guild Wars, you know, but it's just so much fun. It's like getting all the crafting that I've ever wanted in my life and building and all that out in one game, you know. So it's
yeah.
I mean, there's not really much else. Even in multiplayer, the zombies and everything aren't turned on, so you're not really fighting anything. You're just building. But I love that. I absolutely love it.
And so. You know what? It's so much fun to see what everybody else has done.
Yeah.
And actually, I would really like the site owner, I would love it if he would just turn the monsters on for a little while. Because have you seen that zombie petting zoo near your tower?
Yeah.
And you go down in the little hole and there's a mob spawner. And somebody put a sign in there that said, please do not tap on the glass.
Yeah. Well, I think the zombies and everything are kind of broken in multiplayer right now. So,
maybe we'll see that soon.
Yeah, there was just a patch where sheep actually are around now. So we can see sheep.
Oh, yay!
But we can't get the wool from them yet, the cloth.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But yeah, I think multiplayer's broken, and there's some bugs coming. But
well, considering, and that's the thing, this game is in alpha. Mm-hmm. And look at how much we can do. It's so much fun.
I'm just scared of the day when he's like, yeah, remember I said this was an alpha? I'm going to go ahead and wipe the server, and we're going to go to beta now. And everybody will, I mean, the world will collide with itself. It'll just, like, explode and implode at the same time. And
oh, man, I can't rebuild that.
Space-time continuum. Yeah, it really will be, kind of, if that happens. But, yeah, so Guild Wars.
Yes, Guild Wars.
Guild Wars news, yes. So we had this interview, and it was funny because we sent this interview out a couple weeks ago as essentially about the Halloween event. You know,
actually November 1st.
Okay, yeah. So we wanted to know a little bit more about the Halloween stuff. And And, you know, we didn't hear anything for a while. And then they come back to us with this amazing interview with questions answered by three different people. There's John Stoom, Susan Jessup, and Kristen Perry. And it was just way more than we ever expected. You know what I mean? I mean, they really went above and beyond to answer these questions. And as someone pointed out in the comments, actually, on this, this is for Massively, but as someone pointed out, they said, you know, I always love anything that has to do with Kristen Perry, any interview with her, because she's so passionate, and she's just so, like, you know, you can relate to what she's saying so easily. And it's true. I find that exact same thing. I love reading her stuff.
I do, too. And you know what? I have to confess to being maybe a little underhanded here. Some of these questions, well, I absolutely loved these costumes so much, and I was like, all right, I got to talk to Kristen Perry a little bit at PAX in Seattle, and watching her talk about costume design was so much fun because she is so into it, and she's like, when I really get going and talking about something, she's gesturing and she's kind of leaning forward a little bit. She's so excited, and I was like, I want Kristen Perry to answer some costume questions because these are really awesome, and I'll bet she would have a good time talking about those. So
yeah,
I was kind of, I didn't really say anything, but I was kind of aiming this at her.
yeah, kind of hoping. Yeah, I mean, she seems like the kind of person that when she saw, I don't know how they do it, and maybe they, you know, say, hey, I got a request from Massively to do an interview. She's probably one of those people who'd be like, oh, me, you know.
Let me tell you stuff.
Yeah. So it's really cool. And the interview is great because it goes into kind of how the costumes were made, how they were developed, and everything like that. You know, one of the first questions is, how did you arrive at the final look of the Lunatic Court Finery and the Raymond of the Lich, you know, the two different costumes that came out for Halloween? And they go through it, and they describe some, you know, some pretty detailed stuff. And actually, I was kind of surprised at how intricate they got into all this. And again, you know, Kristen Perry right there with explaining everything, explaining how she developed each little part, and I think it's great.
Oh, I absolutely love it. Now, I have not, I'm probably going to get hate mail for this, I've not seen the movie Legend, have you?
Yeah, a long, long time ago.
Did you get that after you read that? Could you look back at the costumes and say, oh, yeah.
No, I didn't put it two and two together until I read that, and then I was like, yeah, I guess I could see that. But yeah, I was probably 5 or 6 when I saw that.
Oh, okay. So that was, did they have movies then?
Yeah, we had to crank it by hand, and and we had to find a flat wall, you know. But other than that, it was, yeah.
Oh, okay. Now, I have to say, my favorite part of what she said here about the costumes were, P.S., yes, it's a bustle.
Yeah.
In the first day or two, because I absolutely, the Lunatic Court Finery went on my Elementalist, and I don't, it's rarely left. I absolutely am so in love with that outfit. And so many guys in the guild were like, oh my gosh, your butt is big. And I swear, I made a macro for, it's a bustle, you cretin.
Yeah.
And so many of the, I mean, I'm like, how old are you? They're going, what's a bustle?
Well, I thought that too when I saw it, I admit.
We're talking about my character.
Oh, right. Yeah, because she says, P.S., yes, it's a bustle. How many bustles do you have in Guild Wars, and how many just flat-back dresses?
Yes.
So it was just, you know, something new.
I absolutely am crazy about it. It's so cool.
Yeah, that's cool. And then, okay, so we get a little bit farther down in this interview. And let's see, I don't know if there's any, some of these, I'm kind of saving the best part for last. I'm trying to work up to that because there's some pretty big reveals there. But I think one of the funny parts is they explain about the fire that remains when you take the pumpkin head off.
You know,
the flaming pumpkin head is on fire, but when you take it off, your head is still on fire, but there's no head there. So they said that was actually a bug, but then they kept it in because it was so cool.
I actually really like that, and they did the same with the Mysterious Tonics.
Yeah.
Which I just thought was so neat, because bugs, I guess bugs aren't always bad. Sometimes something like this happens, and you get something really cool and really fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny that they say that, because they could have been like, oh, we totally meant to do that. Like, isn't that cool that we did that? I mean, that was the plan.
You know what? And it was awesome. You know what I did? I took 10 Mysterious Tonics, and I was zoning back and forth between the Guild Hall, and I think I was in Gates of Krita. And I'd zone in, pop a tonic, and make it make its head catch on fire just to see what it looked like. I was actually kind of hoping to get a bunny rabbit, because someone told me that when you're a bunny rabbit, you're like completely engulfed in flames.
Oh. So rabbits are more flammable, I guess.
Apparently. I think the Acer was the best, though.
Did you take screenshots of all these?
I did. I need to maybe send one to you for this episode.
Yeah.
Because this is Sura, he just looks a little bit bewildered. And I get to laughing every time I think about it, because it's just this look like, why won't someone put the fire out? And every once in a while he's kind of looking around like, anyone? And my head is on fire.
Oh, poor little guy.
And it is hilarious.
How much fun can you have with bugs?
I know, I love stuff like that.
It's crazy. I think it's funny, too, in this interview is we go down the line a little bit, and Susan Jessup is explaining about the wings. Because, you know, we've talked about this where we said it looks very similar to the Ion wings, and we thought, I mean, they did that promotion there for a while, you know, with the where you get the wings from Ion actually in Guild Wars. So it was kind of like, yeah, this is another Ion wing thing. It looks very Asmodean, and that's, you know, they just write it off as that's what it is. Well, she actually explains, and she says that, I thought this was really a great paragraph by her, where she explains
I hope she was serious.
I think she is, yeah. She says she likes to take photos of dead and rotting animals that she finds in their parking lot, and that she uses the texture from that as, you know, actually in the game. She says a lot of the texture base for the Lich Wings came off of two different dead crows that she found. That's awesome. I mean,
I love it so much.
That's part of being an artist, though. You know, you go out and you find, you realize things that maybe most people would miss, and then you take elements from that and you make it into your art. So it's not as crazy as it sounds. You know, it's not like, oh my God, she's taking pictures of dead animals. But it makes sense to me. But I love the fact, most of all, that she said it in this interview. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think it's great.
Now, this brings a question to mind. She sounds like this happens fairly often, like the security guard keep. What is going on in that parking lot?
Yeah, in the last line,
seriously?
She says she's talking about, the similarity between the Ion things. She says that if people are seeing the similarity, I'll have a better excuse to give the security guy next time I'm caught hunched over a dead carcass.
What is up in that parking lot? Is she like, you know, I need such and such animal. I need such and such animal for this design. I need a close look. So does somebody at ANET, like, go out with a rifle? Hang on, I'll get you one.
It's like a dead zone, just right in the parking lot. Anything that enters dies and falls in the parking lot. Yeah, I don't know what's going on, but it's funny.
But seriously, this was so awesome. I mean, it was just so cool how she got that. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I can see that now. You know, I mean, when you look at those wings, you can see it's very crow-like, but then at the same time it has, you know, kind of its own elements, especially at the top there. And so I think that's cool. And that it was such a simple thing. It wasn't like, you know, oh, we developed it to be like this and to think of, you know, the aerodynamics of this and that. It was, yeah, I found a crow that was dead in the parking lot and just kind of copied that.
And you know what? I love the broken feathers.
Yeah.
That was just a little touch that probably isn't that huge of a deal, but it was something that really attracted me, and it gave it a little more realism. It gave it some more depth.
Yeah, definitely. So I really like that part. This whole interview is really awesome, but at the end there, this is where we're getting some cool stuff. Now, this is where John Stoom, he mentioned here, and it was kind of funny because a lot of comments stemmed from this. You ask him any hints about what costumes we'll see next, and he says, there's going to be a set of costumes coming for the wedding. And, you know, the first time you read this, you're like, wait, wedding? Do we know about, like, has this been announced or whatever? And he says, and they are very, very classy. He goes on and he says that the guys will have top hats. And, you know, and he doesn't say anything about the girls having it, which I think you actually picked up on that, too.
Yes, you know what? I have the cutest little redheaded Mesmer. You've seen her.
Yeah.
She needs a top hat.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be funny. I mean, not funny, but it would be awesome. But I think the, like, you know, we're talking about here is the fact that you know, I guess the main thing here is the wedding. Like, what is this wedding that we're even one of the comments say, wait, did I miss something? What, you know, wedding? So a lot of speculation has been going on about this. Of course, the obvious thing is the Gwen wedding. You know,
Gwen and Karen.
Gwen and Karen, but it's almost like, well, is that too obvious? You know, a lot of times we get hints like this, and then it turns out to be something completely different. What were some of the other speculations?
Emperor Khisu, because we've got, well, and I'll let you get to that little detail here in a couple of minutes. But we know that a descendant of Emperor Khisu is responsible for a lot of what happens in Kantha in the future. And we're looking toward Kantha for Guild Wars Beyond now. So there is a school of thought that says, you know, Karen is still missing. They technically haven't even gotten together at this point. I mean, they left things unresolved. And before Winter's Day that's pretty quick. I mean, that's pretty fast to move. So maybe Emperor Khisu's getting married.
That would be that would certainly be not unexpected, but it would be interesting. Now, is that something that a lot of people in the forums are talking about?
Yeah, I've actually seen that quite a bit. I think there was a little speculation around for other things just here and there. But Khisu and Gwen and Karen, I think, are like the two top. That's the main speculation.
Okay. I think that would make the most sense. And I think that it would be, you know, I mean, I think about things like that, how they're still building that storyline up until the launch of Guild Wars 2. And, like, what other games do that? You know what I mean? Like, that is just, it's so cool to think that we're still getting that progression. And we're still getting that storyline that we know is coming because of the books and because of, you know, little hints here and there. But to actually flesh that out up until the launch, I mean, it keeps us busy. It keeps us, entertained and interested in what's coming. Man, it's just such a brilliant strategy, I think.
I absolutely love it. I have to say, I don't know that I want it to be Gwen and Karen quite yet. Just because I'm enjoying the story, and I would hate it. I'm like stopping myself. I don't want the story to end yet. I don't want it to be, and then they got married and lived happily ever after the end. I mean, we've had all this drama and build up with her pushing him away and so on and so forth, and I would hate for her to just fall into his arms now and, oh, the end.
Well, maybe she's going to marry some other guy first, and then they're going to have a couple kids together, and then they're going to go to Mori Povich, and they're going to talk about how she really actually loves this other guy, and then he's going to come out, and then he's going to be like, oh, my God, and then they're going to jump up and hug each other, and then they're going to fight. He's going to fight with the other. Wait, you think this is... No? Not going to happen?
I'm sure that's exactly what's going to happen.
And Karen, they'll take a paternity test, and Karen will be the father. I think that's what's going to happen.
No, it'll be a char. It'll totally be a char.
That would be a plot twist, actually.
It's a scandal. So anyway, I don't think I want this wrapped up with a nice, neat little bow.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, a char and Mori Povich. That would extend things a little while, I think. Yeah, that
maybe
would...
Emperor Khisu is going to marry a char.
Oh, hey, yeah, maybe.
All right, it's just too silly. What's next?
Okay, but I think, I mean, was there anything else from this interview that you wanted to point out? I think that pretty much covered it.
No, Winds of Change. This is the first time we've got the name of the Guild Wars Beyond content for Kantha.
Oh, that's right.
So I think they were saying Crisis in Kantha was like a working title.
Yeah.
But we weren't sure, and now we've got Winds of Change, and yay!
Yeah, I mean, he talks about, Kieran's Return and Kantha Winds of Change. I mean, right there, it's there. And this has all been approved by ArenaNet, so they, they know when they go through the process of approving these interview answers, they know that they're doing this. You know, they know that they're revealing these things for the first time, and we thank them for it.
Well, but, and I'm sure they know exactly how I was reacting when I got this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't remember what it was. I think I was actually supposed to be doing something for Massively. I mean, I was like in the middle of something when this came in. I know I'm supposed to be working on this, but you've got to see this paragraph. I did that like five times. I could not stop looking at it.
Well, I mean, it's some exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Guild Wars geeks like us.
I like Winds of Change. I just like that title because we know that the Echovald Forest is going to start very slowly coming back to life.
Oh, okay.
So the title kind of fits.
Yeah, that's cool. So what else? Anything else in there?
Those were the highlights. Now this sparked something that I just thought of this like 5 minutes ago, but I kind of want to address it a little bit and get your opinion on it. And I would love to hear from the listeners and see what you think. The entire war in Krytoline, I was talking to some people in my main character's guild, and there was this opinion that, you know, if you're not a lore fanatic, this stuff, you are shut out of this stuff. Mm. And if you want to get to the meat of it, if you want to get to the new content, you have to sit through some... And these are not my words, because I like the lore and I love this, but one person's opinion was, if you want to get to this new content, you have to sit through a half an hour of fan fiction.
Oh. Huh.
And all of this, and this is actually, I guess, a valid concern for when Winds of Change comes down. Mm-hmm. We're in Krita. It was so cool because you got these new dialogues as you went. And if you were there at the beginning and you were there working through this as it was released, it was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, and you haven't finished War in Krita, you're going to have to run out to the Shining Blade camp and zone back and forth like a dozen times in one session to catch up.
Oh, that's not
fun. If you're not there... As this is released and playing through it at the right time, it's just... Well, you've seen the flowchart.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do that.
Yeah.
So is that... I mean, if you're not... Getting through it the very first time is okay. And if you love the lore, you're in great shape. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I kind of want to tell you, you know what? Make a couple of hours and sit down and go through this from the beginning and see what you think.
Make a couple hours. I wish I could do that.
Dude. The line for that starts right behind me. But it does... This is just something that I hadn't thought of until the other night, because I've been having so much fun with it. Mm. If you don't really care about deep lore and a heavy storyline, and if you're coming in late and trying to catch up, how much fun is this?
Yeah, I don't know. I still look forward to it. I mean, I'm just a little late to the party.
Well, and late to the party means that you need to go out there. You're going to have to zone back and forth. I want to say it's six times the first time. And yeah. it's not standing by the zone and popping in and out. You have to run a good distance, and you have to stay there until the dialogue finishes. If you get too far away, the dialogue will stop.
Oh.
And then you have to run... Back, you have to run back to the zone again, and there's not a nearby outpost. You actually have to go through, I think, at least, you have to go through one or two full zones to get here from an outpost. So you zone back and forth six times. I want to say six. I've probably got that number wrong. Then you have to go do some things in Eye of the North. You have to go do something outside of... Shoot. You have to go do something in the Asura lands. You have to pop out and watch the Trial of Zin. And then you have to go zone some more, and then you have to go somewhere else and do this. And it's a very lengthy, complicated process to get caught up.
Can you do it in a group?
As long as everybody is on the same page. If somebody is on the wrong section, if someone is at a different point in War in Krita, it could screw you up.
Oh. Because I was going to say, it would be cool to have like War in Krita runs or something. Like get you know, groups of people together and just get it all done and over
that
with.
That would actually be really fun. I'm making a note of that. Well, I have at least one character that still needs to get through it. I've done it on most characters. But I just ran through, as everything was released, I took my characters through. Mm-hmm. So I've only had to go through that complicated process once or twice, and it was more difficult, and I got to this point of, please talk faster because I don't care. But that may be because I've seen the dialogue six times now.
Well, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just not sure how complicated it should be the next round. Because, again, going back to that flowchart, that's what you've got to do. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of back and forth. This won't happen until you've gone to a different zone and done this. And the upside of this is that it is this amazingly in-depth story that pulls all of these threads together, and it's this big overarching story that comes together beautifully. And I personally am crazy about it. But I was given... Several of my guildmates gave me another point of view that I really hadn't thought of before, so I'm kind of interested to hear what people think about that.
Yeah, let us know in the comments what everyone thinks about that. If it's a, you know, a burden, or if it's just something that we need to, that's important to go through and, you know, and read and see to kind of continue on with the story.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, this was a huge tangent from the interview, but but because we know that Winds of Change is coming up, this is the next part of Guild Wars Beyond, and I would love to hear what people think about how we have to do this. You know, is it going to be like this again? Do you want it like this again, or do you want something simpler?
Yeah, let us know. We'll tally up the votes, and no, we won't do that.
But it is an interesting point.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go ahead and get into the emails here.
Yeah.
We have a few that I wanted to read. And so this first one, and this is one I mentioned before, this is actually from beginning of the month. And he says, "Hey guys, not exactly Guild Wars related, but when Sean mentioned Fable should be an MMO, I felt a need to respond. Is there a reason why every existing franchise needs to be turned into an MMO? Guild Wars is a prime example of a completely non-existent franchise becoming a great game. But the thing... with let's have an Elder Scrolls MMO or a Fallout one and so on and so forth, is that every time one of these games goes to an MMO, it kills their non-MMO counterparts. And generally the reasons I play those games are lost due to the need for balance, or they just don't work in an online format. While it's definitely too much effort for them to have an MMO and offline version of the game, but imagine if Tabula Rasa had one." Oh, you went there.
Didn't
you?
He did it.
The franchises that currently exist as offline RPGs should stay that way. It also seems like some games actually end up with arbitrary restrictions because of some lore that was perfectly acceptable for their RPG format, but when making the step up to an MMO, actually detracts more from the experience. Just my thoughts on the subject. Alinos. Well, yeah, if you look at, I hate to use the World of Warcraft example, but, you know, that started out as just Warcraft. You know, Warcraft 3 turned into the online version, which was World of Warcraft, and look how, you know, successful that was. But I think that was just kind of a special case. But, yeah, I do know what you're talking about. I think that making an MMO version of everything is getting a little out of hand. You know, I mean, when we start having, like, a Dukes of Hazzard MMO, then we, you know, then it's just like, okay.
Hold on, stop everything. There is one?
No, but if they did, I would play Luke. No, okay. So if they did, it would be ridiculous. But yeah, I mean, everything is just kind of going that way. You know, where it's just, I think it's a business thing. You know, well, MMOs are big now, so we got to make an MMO version. And yes, I do agree that it kills the lore sometimes, because things have to fit with that online environment. I mean, you know, when you save the princess once, and then there's a guy behind you waiting to save the princess when she respawns, that's a little immersion-breaking. You know, it's a little different.
A lot immersion-breaking.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's why we love Guild Wars, right? so it's, yeah, I mean, I understand. It does break a lot of things, but people, on the other hand, people just want to play their favorite games in that favorite world with other friends and other people. You know, I would love to play an Albion with more than just, you know, I mean, you can see other people, you can see people on your friends list in Xbox Live or whatever. They show up as like a little orb that floats around, and you can kind of, you know, interact with them from there. But it's not a massive world. You know, there's not people running around everywhere. So, I mean, me personally, I would like to see my friends in Albion and me playing with them in Fable 3. I think that would be great. But not everyone likes that. And I understand what he's saying. It does have a lot of ruining moments. But I do thank you for mentioning Tabula Rasa. That's.
Did you see, did you read my story, or any of the comments on my story on the APB purchase? You should, because everybody was like, if this can happen for APB, it can happen for Tabula Rasa.
Yeah, I did read that, actually. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
There were multiple ones of those.
See? People still love that game. Not just me. I wonder if other people still have dreams of that game like me. Anyway.
Definitely not.
So this next email is, this is from, I like his, he's got a pronunciation here. Jorulla Gable. Jorulla Gable.
Nice.
Says, Ruby and Sean, hey guys, I'm Connor hailing, oh, and there, he's just got his name right there. I'm Connor hailing from the Everlasting Sacred Path Guild and Alliance. I've been an avid Guildcast listener for years and just recently discovered you started back up. Very exciting, and it's good to listen again. Might I also add that, Ruby, you are a great addition to the show.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, I shouldn't have read that last part. Anyway,
I
haven't been following Guild Wars 2 very carefully, so maybe you guys could cover some of my questions in the show. If I've read right, there isn't much information released about PvP. All I know is something about world versus world, and first thing that comes to mind is RVR, Realm versus Realm. I'm not sure if you two are familiar with Mythic's MMORPG Dark Age of Camelot or their new MMO Warhammer Online, but they might have the same structure, not sure. But its PvP sounds similar. Basically, it's a persistent world, and everyone runs around fighting on-field battles while taking advantage of the terrain and actual tactical positioning. I also like the fact that you can solo, and if you're skilled enough, you could solo a group of few enemy players. There was also Zerg versus Zerg battles, which were hundreds versus hundreds, which is a nice change and makes you feel like you're in an epic event. Keep and sieges were also included, and defending and taking keeps was a blast. With the keeps, you gained relics, which gave you realm special bonuses in both PvP and PvE. It was great fun, and I wondered if this realm versus realm aspect is similar to the world PvP said to be in Guild Wars 2. If not similar, do you foresee any of those elements maybe making it into the game? I just wanted to address that first. Yeah, we've talked about that several times, actually, where I do... That's how I picture it. I picture what they're talking about with world PvP as they do it in Dark Age of Camelot and Warhammer. But we don't know for sure. I mean, they've hinted at it. Actually, there was a recent interview about it where we didn't really learn anything new. It just kind of went over everything we already knew about that. You know, there's going to be world PvP and there's going to be the same traditional PvP, structured PvP. So, other than that, that's kind of what they keep saying at this point. But, in the true ArenaNet sense, they're going to, at one point, have an entire blog post about it, I'm sure, and, interviews and all this stuff, videos, and they're going to really explain it. So I think until then, we just keep that speculation going that, yeah, it's probably going to be like RVRs. I hope it's 100 versus 100 battles. I mean, that would be really a lot of fun. But who knows? Maybe they have something even better. I'm sure, they keep surprising us with that, so.
Yeah.
I don't know. So going on in his next question here, he says, also have a couple little questions. Can you use a one-word name for your character, or are we limited to a first-name, last-name format like in Guild Wars Classic?
You can have one, two, or three. I asked this at PAX.
Cool. Cool. So I can be...
Sean the Noob.
I could be Sean the... Wait a minute. Okay, so the next question. Also, I listened to the episode where Ruby talked about the home instances. Is this your own personalized home? Where is it, and can you bring people to visit? Thanks, guys. I enjoyed the show, and I hope to hear from you, Jorulla Gable. And then he gives a little PS there. He says, I noticed that Ruby doesn't have an avatar on the Guild Wars Guru 2 forum, so I made one. That's a cool. I'll have to send that to you. It's a cool.
Wait,
little,
what is this?
It's a little. Icon he made for the forums. For you.
Oh. Well,
has your name on it?
See.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Okay. Well, I didn't know about this until just now. I'm so sorry, or I maybe would have used it.
So answering that other question about the home instances,
yeah.
From what I gather, now correct me if I'm wrong, from what I gather, it's not just one structure, right? It's kind of like your own little... like main street, and you have
it's like a city block.
Yeah, and you can do kind of like you can do now with guilds, where you can have you can hire the merchant and the storage person, and all these different NPCs. So I imagine that city block is going to have all these stores where you can open them up. I'm sure.
Oh, I hope so. It was what I saw. I think I just saw probably a small part of it, and I think there's probably a lot more to come. It changes. It's an instanced area inside Divinity's Reach. you can, I believe you can bring people in, kind of like you can the Hall of Monuments. Now, if you're the party leader, when you go into the instance, it's your instance.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can show people around.
Yeah.
And then, depending on your background, if you're a noble, you get, like, something a little fancier.
Cool, cool. Yeah. That, and it's all, I think it is race-specific, because they mentioned the fact that, like, a Sura would have a lab, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't see, my human noble elementalist had a very cool canopy bed. It was like a big tester. And
oh, nice.
It was neat, and I sort of can't see a Nord sleeping in it.
Now, I wonder if you can do that, though, if you can kind of switch. Like in Lotro, you can, you know, you have the elven, dwarven, hobbit, human, different types of homesteads that they can have, like the, you know, the cities that they can live in, and they're all race-specific. But you can switch, too. You know, you can have a human living in a dwarf city and things like that. So I wonder if they're going to allow something like that, and then you'll have Norn sleeping in Silvari beds. It'll be anarchy.
I smash that leaf. I don't know. I know that where your home instance is based, I'm kind of thinking this through because this actually hasn't occurred to me until just now. Where your home instance is based on your home racial city. Humans get Divinity's Reach. Mm-hmm. The Norn get a Norn city, and so on and so forth. So, what?
Nothing.
No,
wait, what did the Sahari get?
I forget.
Oh, okay.
This is before I get a leaf.
That's right.
I can't imagine. They haven't really ruled that out, but I can't imagine they would let you say, you know what? I'm a Silvari. I think I want my home city to be the Norn city, though. First of all, I don't think the Norn would allow that.
Well, they also showed that Divinity's Reach had every race in there. You know, so maybe
yeah, they were
working
around there. So
yeah. So maybe it is possible. I don't know. Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. Or if I don't think they've already announced or said anything about that. But if they have, you know, someone let us know. So we don't sound like complete idiots. More.
Speak for yourself.
Okay, so this next one, let's see. This is about your article, your Flameseeker Chronicles article. And,
Lord, is somebody mad at me?
I think so.
You seriously have got to warn me about this stuff.
Oh, actually, this has an intro, too. So, we'll play that on this show. Actually, the intro that you heard on this show was... How's that? Okay, so this one says, "Hey, Sean and Ruby, just wanted to take a moment to add my comments to a poignant article Ruby wrote for the Flameseeker Chronicles."
Oh, man, I know which one he's talking about.
She commented on the rising tide of ragers and complainers who have been slowly infiltrating the GW community. For anyone who hasn't read it yet, I encourage you to add a link to the show notes. With the quality of information ArenaNet has released about Guild Wars 2 and the Hall of Monuments, it's easy to find our heads euphorically in the clouds. Like any stimulant that releases dopamine, we inevitably want more and more. When we don't get our fix, we get angry. Give me Halloween hat now, he writes, and with N-A-O at the end. Actually,
I'm due for hats.
I don't think this is raging against you. I think it's agreeing with you. Mm-hmm. It says, or if we get anything less than our usual dose, we become agitated. Only one TOT bag? Shenanigans. This game blows.
Thank you. Jeez.
I encourage everyone to pull their heads out of the clouds and reacquaint themselves with planet Earth. That way, when ArenaNet decides to take us for another trip to the clouds via the Mesmer reveal, wink, we won't be expecting a trip into space. Now to business. I know Ruby is aware of this, but even with a great post like the one I'm referring to, it will never make the problem totally go away. In fact, you probably won't see any reduction in the growing entitlement mentality of the GW community. Little hint here, that's everywhere. That's not just Guild Wars. Don't get me wrong, I'm not advocating she cease writing those great grounding posts. I just wanted to add, there is hope. It is found in guilds and alliances. I have quickly come to love my guild and alliance. People are helpful and friendly. From noob to veteran, I've yet to find an elitist among them. Now back on point. If your guild is made up of ragers, complainers, or self-loving elitists, I encourage you to find a new guild to call home. Because it's guilds and alliances like mine that people will look forward to seeing and playing with come GW2. Keep up the great guild casts, Sensei. And then... he has an intro for us that you heard at the beginning of the show.
Wait a minute, is that... I bet this is a guy, he's in the Massively Guild, if I'm not mistaken. And
well, it also says Media Master 9000. That's he's got that in parentheses.
Okay, I think so. But my Guild and Alliance is absolutely awesome. And he does make a good point, and I think I maybe get a little bit sheltered because the group in the Guild and Alliance that I've actually got both of my accounts in, it is just the most amazing group. They are so fantastic. Yeah. And then I come out of that comfy little shell. We've probably easily got 400 active people in that alliance. Wow. And I come out of that comfy little shell, and I hit the forums, and I'm like, what is wrong with you people?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, he's absolutely right about not solving the problem. You saw some of the comments I got.
Yeah.
And I actually, as we talk on these episodes, I sit here and I make notes about what I need to include in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And I wrote Flamebait Chronicles link. So it's very, very true. And it's not. It still felt good to write. It still felt good to get that out.
Yeah, and the basics of it, just you were kind of calling out all the entitlement issues that people have about, you know, like, I need this now. I mean, back in the old days, back when I was walking uphill both ways to school, they had these events where you had to participate to get the hat. You know, you had to do something. And now it's like you just stand there and you get it, and people are still complaining, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you don't even have to be at your computer and you get these hats. So,
but it's still not quite good enough. And yeah. I'll tell you, it's just what I've seen in the Guild Wars community. I think it bothers me more because I've always viewed the Guild Wars community as a whole as one of the best out there, and I still do. Mm. But I think this impatience and this feeling that ArenaNet owes us is kind of creeping to the fore. And you know what got me started thinking about this, and I promise not to rant about this.
Right.
Much is the Necromancer videos, and that still just ticks me off because watching the people justify it. And it happened a while back, but it was the first that really made me sit up and say, you know what? People are kind of getting out of control here. Somebody figured out the URL for the Necro videos. We talked about this a long time ago.
Yeah.
And they just passed those suckers everywhere. Well, ArenaNet was not, they weren't ready to release those yet.
Yeah.
Somebody went digging and found the URLs is what happened. And ArenaNet, they came out and said, you know, we are really disappointed that the surprise was ruined.
Yeah.
And I said something at the time and just got my butt flamed for it.
Yeah.
And I commented on it again in this post, and there was so much, well, they should have expected that. You know, they should have given it to us sooner if they didn't want that to happen. And so much of the fault was thrown back on ArenaNet. Well, this is their own fault for this, this, and this. Mm. And the fact that we took something that didn't belong to us is entirely beside the point.
Yeah.
And when you're thinking like that, something's not right.
Yep.
So, some people did not like me saying that. I'm cool with that.
I'm holding back my own rant right now. Can you hear the pressure?
I can hear you grinding your teeth.
Yeah, I just sum it up by saying entitlement is, it's like a disease. It's just, it's getting horrible. But
oh, that was the other awesome thing. Somebody called me out for saying entitlement. They were like, it's just a catchphrase. I don't even know if it applies here. And I was like, okay. It applies a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty much the definition. Yeah.
Yeah, so. But that it was that it's just a trendy word, and that's maybe kind of hinting that maybe that's why I was just using it. But
yeah, you're so trendy. No.
I am so trendy. But no, if you take something that it doesn't belong to you and you think it's okay, it's entitlement.
Yeah, or if you complain that you didn't get it and you think you need more of it and you need it right now and you need it instantly with no effort, that's entitlement.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to denigrate anybody's passion about the game because I don't think there's any question that I am really excited about this. And I get impatient and irritated just as much as anybody. Mm-hmm. So I don't mean to downplay anything, but we don't technically need any of this. I tell my kids this when they say, I need such and such. No, you need food and shelter. You want this.
You're such a mean mom.
I'm a horrible mother. But seriously, it's like we lose all perspective and think this is some sort of physical need that we are owed. Mm. and that we have to have this now. And I also said I wasn't going to rant much, didn't I?
Yeah, what's up with that?
I don't know. I just looked at the clock. It's been like an hour. So, but no, we don't need any of this. You will not die if you sit back and wait. It's okay.
I'm gonna cut out that whole rant, and I'm just gonna put a thing in the middle, like in SpongeBob, and it'll say like 2 hours later.
Okay, I'm done. I promise.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. So let's get on this next email. It says,
"Biting my lip."
It says, "Dear, wow, this is a good one, Schwabrin," and then he says, "Yeah, somewhere in there are a mess of both of your names." So it's cool that they are giving free stuff away for dedicated stuff in the Hall of Monuments, but I'm personally feeling a severe lack of love from the current system. The state of things is I'm currently playing through the Guild Wars games, but I'm playing very casually. I'm an engineering student with a job, so Guild Wars gets about 2 to 4 hours a week. That being said, I do play, and I will until Guild Wars 2 comes out. I'll get the pre-order and everything. But the issue is that, as far as I can tell, all I'll probably get is one lousy achievement per campaign. I feel like, though I've been behind Guild Wars for a while and I defend it, they aren't giving me anything in return except my name back if I want it. It seems the rewards are only for the hardcore. I'm just a bit sad, I guess. I know that there's a summer and Christmas breaks, but I feel like they are forcing me to choose between beating the campaigns or grinding for titles. This seems unwise, as I'm sure that tons of other new people who got Guild Wars when the trilogy came out are in the same boat. What are your thoughts? Is this reasonable, or is it cruel to only reward the uber hardcore for dedication? And then he's got a joke here. He says, oh wait. I think it's a joke. He says, "Joke, I've been a good little gamer. I always get off at about the 2-hour mark when it politely asks me to. And what do I get? Screwed. Why am I telling you this? Because, besides the vent, because I know they listen and maybe it's something that they just didn't think of. Well, thanks and bye." Boy, what were we just talking about before this?
But I can see his point. And I don't think... This, to me, is kind of a valid frustration, because ArenaNet has a very fine line to walk here. On one hand, you have players that have been around for a long time. They've done it all. They've earned these rewards over time. Mm-hmm. But where this paints ArenaNet into a corner is that I'm kind of thinking this through as I go, so bear with me here. Mm-hmm. Where this paints ArenaNet into a corner is that Guild Wars 2, the buzz, is insane. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is one of the two biggest games coming out, this and SWTOR.
Yep.
And
Hello Kitty Online, although that already... Okay, sorry.
You know, it just goes unsaid, though. I mean, I don't even feel like I'm qualified to talk about Hello Kitty Online.
Right.
But what happens here is that you have thousands of new players flocking to this game because of the Hall of Monuments, and they want to get caught up. Mm-hmm. So you have two player bases here. You've got these hardcore people that... There are three people in my guild that are at 50 Hall of Monuments points now. And several of us are darn close. And then you've got this huge player base that they have 3 points for owning the game. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's even possible to make everything fair for everybody.
Nope.
And the best, I don't know if it's hardcore, I feel like loyalty should be rewarded.
Yes, yeah.
And these people that bought the game and have stuck with it through the beginning and have supported them for the past 5 years, it's not that they are, there's not first class and second class citizens, it's that they have had the time to accumulate this stuff. And they've, I hate to say earned it, but they kind of have.
So your stance is essentially that you think that you kind of agree with them, that you think that while it is important to have to reward loyalty, at the same time, everybody should kind of be on the same playing field? Is that what you're saying?
I don't think it's possible for everybody to be on the same playing field. And I guess, you know, it would be... I don't even want to say they should be on the playing field, because in a perfect world, yes. But the fact is, and this is, I don't want to sound unsympathetic or harsh, because I am also playing my second account. I've owned it for 6 months now, and she's doing all of this for the first time. She has, I believe, 7 Hall of Monuments points. I have an account. I'm in that position, too. But she shouldn't have 47 Hall of Monuments points like my 4-year-old account. Mm-hmm. It just, it shouldn't be that way. And the best I can say, and this is where I don't want to sound harsh, is that you're new and you've got time. When you're staring down the barrel of 3 points, I'm sure you're looking at these people going, you know, this is not fair. I don't, why are you, you know, you're really kind of crapping on this player base over here, these new people. But it's not that, because you've got time. Guild Wars 2 is not coming out next week. Just be patient. And I'm making another note here, because I actually have, I wrote a guide on what to do when you've just got 3 points. Because yeah. I think you think it's a lot more difficult than it is. And you're going to be surprised in a few months down the road.
See, okay, here's my thought on it.
I talk too much.
Get ready. No, you don't at all. I just want to kind of offer, I mean, I think my opinion differs not a lot from yours, but quite a bit. But I feel very, very strongly about this. I think that, to put it into an analogy, which I always do, you don't sit on the sidelines of a marathon and say it's not fair that you're not running in that marathon. You know, you train for years for a marathon. You know, you get ready and you do these things and you prepare, and that's why you're in a marathon. And that happens with anything, everything and anything. We have what I'm going to get really kind of deep here, but we have this thing going on nowadays, and I guess this kind of goes back to entitlement. At my daughter's school, you know, they have contests, and everybody's a winner. Everybody gets a trophy. There's no first and second place anymore. Everybody gets so there, it leaves no incentive to actually do the best you can to be first or second place. If everyone gets a trophy, it doesn't matter. And I think that is absolutely ruining everyone. And this is something that I feel so strongly about, and it really upsets me. You know, when you see any kind of, I mean, I'm not a highly competitive person, but when I see a competition and everybody wins, it's like, what is happening? You know, you're all of those core skills that people are losing, you know, to this whole, I don't know. You know what I'm talking about?
I absolutely
we're losing,
do.
Yeah, we're losing all of that in our society. So when we get this, when we take this down to something as, you know, seemingly meaningless as a game, and then people are applying what they've learned in life, which is I don't have to really try to get whatever I want, and I can just do the very lowest effort, and I'll still get the same trophy as the guy who worked his butt off for it. When you're applying that to a game, you come into a game and you say, why don't I have 50 points in my Hall of Monuments already like everybody else? It's not fair, because when I was in preschool, I was given a trophy for doing nothing. You know what I mean? And I think that it just all goes hand in hand, and it really makes me sick to my stomach. It makes me so angry that people will think. And, you know, I mean, I appreciate you writing in and saying these things and asking our opinion, and I appreciate you being a listener. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the fact that I don't understand why people think that they can get something for doing, you know, the very minimal amount of work. And I just think that it's loyalty should be paid off. I think that striving to achieve to be the best, you know, if you see 50 points right there, you know, Ruby wrote a guide. You follow that guide, you look it up, and you go through and you get those 50 points. You don't, there should be no reason for you to not, you know, not do the same thing that everybody else has to do and then complain that you don't have the same rewards.
You know what this made me think of? You know what I want in Guild Wars so badly? I mean, aside from a mini Vizu? I want a witch's hat.
Uh-huh.
I was not there for that witch's hat. I wasn't there. I will never have one. I'm okay with that. I mean, I will. I've seen several people say that the hats should be in the old hats should be in the cash shop. Hmm. That would bother me.
Yeah, it would me too.
I wasn't there for that. I shouldn't have that as badly as I want one, and as, oh my gosh, cute as my Ellie would look with one of those things on. I even know what armor it would go with. I wasn't there. I shouldn't have one.
Yeah, it's like sometimes things aren't fair, and that's
sometimes. Well, and sometimes they are, but they're not fair in your favor.
Yeah, and for people to try to make everything fair to everyone all the time, it would never ever work. It would just never work. It's just I don't know. It's just one of those
this
things.
This is just how it is. Yeah. And I'm That's not to say, I mean, I understand your frustration. I understand looking at this and going, oh my gosh, how do they expect me to get this? But, and I will link that guide. It's actually called Stop Telling Me How to Get 50 Points When I Only Have 3. And I will just remind you that you have more time than you think you do. There's not a hurry. You don't have to do it this week. It's going to progress faster than you think. And I will remind you that they're going to support Guild Wars 1 after Guild Wars 2 comes out. Mm-hmm. You can continue progressing on this as long as you want.
Yep.
So it's okay. Just, you know, some people are at the finish line because they started running sooner.
Yeah.
To borrow a little bit from Sean's metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll get there. It's just because you're not there right now doesn't mean you won't get there.
Yep. Okay, well, let's move on. Now that my rant is over, let's
yay,
move on.
Yay, I like Sean rants.
I'm so old school. I don't know. So this next one says, hey, Sean, Ruby Sean. A set of topics I wanted to talk about this time. First up, holidays. Do we have any confirmation on Guild Wars 2 holidays yet? Seeing as Guild Wars has the Dragon Festival, Halloween, Winter's Day, the anniversaries, and some others for holidays right now, will this be the same for Guild Wars 2, or will we get new ones or even lose some? Let's answer that one before we go on. They haven't really said, but holidays have become a huge part of Guild Wars. And we know that the people who set these up at ArenaNet love them. You know, so many things have evolved from the development of the holidays. I mean, you know, costumes and different armors and, you know, quests and all this stuff. Even the fact that, you know, with the snowball tournaments, where they would have it where you would, it would replace the skills in your skill bar. I mean, that was something that they were like, hey, let's kind of apply this to the rest of the game.
Yeah, it was fun. Know?
So, yeah, and I think that it's very important to them. And I would, I mean, have they said specifically if they will still have events in Guild Wars 2?
I don't think they have. I feel like, and again, this is one of those things that we talked about a long time ago. It's hard to remember on the fly. I feel like they have hinted that they will.
Yeah, I think so too. And I just, I mean, what I'm saying is I think that they would be silly not to, because it's such a big part.
And you know what? I have to get this out. This is top of my wish list for an event, a holiday in Guild Wars 2, is a commemoration of when the war in Crida was won.
Yeah.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah, that's true. That would be kind of cool. Okay, so the second question here, it says, second topic, MMO. Last episode, Terrence opened the jar of evil, the solo versus multi discussion. I will not share my opinion on this, but I will answer the two questions that you asked. If a single player version of Guild Wars existed, would you play it? Probably yes. If there were two versions of Guild Wars and you had to pay a sub for a persistent world, would you play it? No, probably not. And not just because I dislike subs, but because of the simple fact that I do not possess the brag factor. If this were the case, Guild Wars would become another RPG on my shelf with about 70 hours of gameplay, which I could replay if I wanted to, instead of the 80 hours a month I put into it now because I just got hooked on the engaging PvP Guild Wars offers. And the third topic, the drama. With three instances of drama so far, I feel ArenaNet is doing pretty well on releasing information and handling any misunderstandings. So kudos to their communications department, even though they have yet to patch up the no dedicated healer class issue by revealing the battle monk class. I think that's wishful thinking there. It says,
I know, but we have lots of that.
Yeah. It says, to be honest, the first real mistake was the transmutation stones issue, when they said, we think it is just flat-out unacceptable when games don't allow you to choose how your character looks, only to turn around and say that they would have transmutation stones available through their in-game store. Had they included a part of their rectification saying players should have a way to acquire items like transmutation stones through the course of playing the game, it would even be drama. But the dungeon DLC issue would have not even been an issue if ArenaNet would not talk about their in-game store and its mechanics before they know for certain themselves what is what. Aside from the mistakes and misinformation provided by PC gameplay, I feel that it is ArenaNet's fault. Your thoughts. Signed, Anasi Chapay. Chapay. He says the pie part sounding more like pie, as in I, Captain. That's awesome. Okay. So, yeah, I don't really want to get into all that drama again. We got some emails that were like, you guys are complete idiots, like those kind of
things.
Man,
I am chewing on my tongue right now.
Yeah, but I just think that, I think overall, he's right. You know, they have three instances of drama, which is not that bad when you consider what happens with a lot of other games, even before launch. You know, the drama happens because people are so excited about the game. They're so ready to jump on every little tidbit of information and just analyze the heck out of it. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing at all. I think that's great. I think that's a testament to ArenaNet and their game. So you have this kind of readiness at all times. And so when any little, you know, even one word is off, people are going to jump on that and say, what does this mean? And then it's going to turn into a giant forum thing. I think that with that in mind, when you look at how little drama has actually happened around this, it's not too bad, you know? They're doing pretty good, I think.
Yep. I am not saying anything.
That's Ruby being quiet and biting her tongue. Right?
Yes.
Okay, well, let's go on to another email. I think we have time for maybe a couple more. Hey, Ruby and Sean. Ruby, this is Jay from geeksandgamers.com. I wrote to you about a week ago asking you where I should send an email to ask you a question. Lol, so anyway, here goes. I had an initial concern, but after listening to podcast 19, another came up, and I think it's fitting to address that one first. Transmutation stones. I, like Sean, can see both sides of this issue. However, I don't agree with either ArenaNet or the Ragers. Personally, I feel that and would wholeheartedly prefer for ArenaNet to just have a subscription fee for Guild Wars. This is why, in my opinion, Guild Wars was lacking. Oh, here we go. As silly as it may sound, you couldn't jump, and the fact that everything was instanced when you went out into the world lowered its value in my eyes. Missing those key features and charging $15 a month, I don't think that there would be a contest. I would have chosen WoW or LOTRO or Vanguard. However, when you take away the subscription fee, all of a sudden those features not being there don't matter as much, except for those moments when you just logged out of something else, logged into Guild Wars, and found that your space bar doesn't launch you into the air. just addressing that real quick before we go on, that's exactly it. You know, they took a lot of features out of the game that maybe could arguably even be features. You know, jumping, it's not a huge issue, or at least they thought it wasn't. That's how they can make it not a subscription. You know, it doesn't have a full crafting system. It doesn't have all these things, but over time, it's developed into that, and they still have maintained no subscription fee. So I think that is something to say about that there.
I don't think Guild Wars would ever be what it was today if it had a sub fee.
Oh, no, not at all. That's absolutely true, because it's it was a revolutionary business model at the time, and it really got a lot of people into MMOs, including me.
Me?
Yeah, I mean, we would not be here right now if they had a sub fee.
I'd still be playing Sims. Shut up. Sims is awesome.
No, it is, actually. I like it. Okay, so continuing on, it says, Guild Wars 2, however, is a very different game in terms of quality. Everything from graphics to features are top-notch and all there. Now, if I compare what I know about Guild Wars 2 to the games aforementioned with the subscription fee, I still choose Guild Wars. I'm the type of player who likes simplicity when it comes to my fees. I hate free-to-play games because they are never truly free. They can't be. So you get into the cycle where you pay $10 here and $5 here, and I found that generally the things you really want are always going to be the expensive things, and you either have to give up the cash or go without. Why would you want to go through all of that instead of just paying $15 a month and getting everything? Whether these transmutation stones are going to be $5 or $10, the majority of players that do spend the money are going to end up spending much more than $15 a month, because this is something that will never stop as long as you're playing the game. You'll always be getting new gear and wanting it to look right, so you'll always be paying. And that's probably why they chose this particular feature to charge for, which is fine. I just think that ArenaNet would make out much better and please more of their player base by giving the option to either buy the box and then nickel and dime your way through the game, or buy the box and then pay $15 a month and get everything the game has to offer. Before I continue again, I wanted to kind of stop here. A lot of people are doing this. They're doing the free-to-play, cash shop, and then with a sub option. A lot of games that are going free-to-play after being sub, you know, like Champions and LOTRO and DDO, kind of, you know, they have this VIP section where you can just still pay the subscription and get in, which I think is a good idea because, once again, it's options. You know, it gives you options. But I don't think – I think Guild Wars players would not vets, Guild Wars vets would not do well with this. I think they would just – I mean, even if – a lot of people I think would rather pay $20 a month in microtransactions than pay a $15 sub just for the mere fact of it being a sub. I just think that that's kind of how the thought process works for a lot of people.
I tend to agree. I love the choices. I love having those choices, which is why I love the DDO and LOTRO business model so much. Mm. I don't think that business model would work for Guild Wars because they are... I mean, their business model is one of the main... This is like the foundation of what they are.
Yeah.
And... Yep. I don't know. I think the key word in a lot of what you said is want. This is all entertainment, and transmutation stones, the way they're offering this, transmutation stones and costumes, you know, the current cash shop stuff and the future cash shop stuff, are all completely optional. Mm-hmm. You can look awesome and still play the game just the same you could if you didn't have them.
Yep.
So I'm okay with it, and I think ArenaNet will probably stay as far away from the sub model with Guild Wars as they can, and I think they should.
I think that it doesn't matter that much because I can reasonably think about the differences and comparisons, and I can say, well, you know, if it's free to play, I'm not going to spend $50 a month because that would be ridiculous, and then on the other hand, I'll think, well, if I pay $15 a month for a subscription, then I'll get my money's worth. You know, there are pros and cons on both sides, but I think that ArenaNet would be doing a huge mistake if they brought that in just because of the stigma attached. You know, it's not so much the money spent, it's the fact that you can tell your friends that you play a game that doesn't have a sub fee. You know, or that, I mean, not so much that you can tell your friends, but you can say... You know, that you,
right.
you play this game without a sub fee because that sounds so much. I mean, that, you know, that's what it was built on. That's sticking by that. It doesn't, you know, that getting down to the real root of the thing there, if you actually did pay more, that almost doesn't matter. And it's kind of peculiar how that works out. But yeah, I think that just with the stigma itself and the reputation of having a subless game, that is pretty much why they need to stick to that, even if they do kind of nickel and dime you to death with, you know, with cash shop stuff. So,
well, it's too much of who they are.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
That said, I would sub to Guild Wars in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I probably would, too. I probably would, too.
One of the few that I would sub to.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just too much of who they are, and I honestly don't see them nickel and diming us to death. Yeah. I hope.
No, I don't think to death, but, you know. It's a possibility, I guess. Okay, so this goes on and he says, okay, that's my opinion on that. The next point of discussion is not so agreeable with ArenaNet. Uh-oh. I have a very close friend who really wanted to play Guild Wars with me, and I really wanted her to as well. I gave her my trial code to try it out. She used the code, started to download the client, and then boom, she couldn't install the game. Why? Because her computer is a Mac. Alright, I understand that most computers use PCs, but I bet if one would do a study, they would find that more than enough Mac users want to play MMOs to make it profitable for companies to develop for the Mac as well as PC. What really got to me, too, was the announcement about the iPhone, iPod, iPad, and smartphone app that is going to go as far as they can take it. Why is an app being designed for Apple mini products, but the game isn't being designed to run on primary Apple products? Do you guys have any ideas on if ArenaNet is rethinking the decision to not design for Mac? If they aren't, do you have any idea of what the reason is? I'm sorry for the long email, but I had to get those ideas out. Thank you for doing the show. I listen to you every week, Jay. P.S. Given how long ArenaNet is taking to reveal classes, if another pansy-ranged class, his words, not mine, is announced before the second melee class finally is, yeah, I'm looking at you, Sean. I know you want to know about the Mesmer, but I need to know about some class that I can hit people with. I will crush the internet with my rage, that is all. Wow. So there you go. well, as far as the Mac thing, a lot more companies are developing MMOs for the Mac. You know, Warhammer did it, City of Heroes... I'm drawing a blank now, but there are a lot of them that have actually developed, you know, specifically for the Mac. Even, you know, Fallen Earth did that. And so, I mean, the recognizing that gamers are buying Macs now and playing on Macs, because before, you know, the Mac wasn't really a gaming platform. I don't know. I don't think we've heard anything about it being specifically designed for the Mac, for Guild Wars 2. But if they're working on an iPhone, you know, essentially an Apple platform already, and it's not the game itself, it's a companion app, but if they're working with Apple on that, I mean, maybe it's a possibility.
I honestly wouldn't mind seeing that. And I have to say, the nuts and bolts, the design, the stuff behind that, what goes into it, really not my forte, so I don't actually understand what would be involved in producing the game for the Mac. I don't know how complicated of a process that would be, and I feel like that's something I would need to know to speculate. I can say that I would love to see it, just because the more people that can play this game, the better, in my mind. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I don't understand the first thing about how all of that works, and I feel like I shouldn't even begin to speculate.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, the nuts and bolts of PC versus Mac programming, I mean, I know it's a lot different, but I don't know. I'm sure it's one of those things that's not easy. You know, it's probably like almost rewriting the game, you know, on the coding side of things. But and then, you know, you have to test it, and you have to keep up with that, and I'm sure it's kind of a big headache. But I don't know. I mean, I think that traditionally, gamers have been, you know, PC, MMO gamers at least, have been on the PC. So I think that's probably their first priority, but after that, who knows? But we haven't heard anything yet, officially.
I don't know. I feel like most of this stuff, what goes on behind the scenes, is a lot more complicated than we realize. Mm-hmm. Because it's so easy to say, well, the whole game is there, just make it for Mac.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it does not work. It's not like pushing the right button.
Yeah, it's not like pushing the Mac button.
It's, yeah, so... Yeah. Wait, do I have one? Hang on here. I don't have one of those.
Oh, you don't have that version? Oh, that's too bad.
I have a compact. They must not make those.
Oh, man. We're going to get some email on that now.
I love my computer so much.
I'm going to censor that out.
You gave me so much grief when I bought this computer. I remember that, and I love it. You and Elliot both were all over me.
Me and Elliot, and probably everyone listening to this, so get ready.
I love my computer so much, so say what you will. She's awesome. I love her.
Okay.
Okay, so.
Anyway, well, actually, I'm going to read one more short email we have here, just because that's about all we have time for. And it's pretty short. It says, "Hi, Sean and Ruby. It's definitely just dawned on me. We're going to get some new emotes with Guild Wars 2. Do you think emotes will play a role in the dynamic event system? For example, waving to an NPC will trigger them to wave back. I think it could be neat. Waving is just a small example. On your mark, get ready, discuss. Drenem.
All I can think is like two dozen people ganging up and all waving at an NPC at the next time. At the same time, until like his arm falls off.
Well, we know it's possible. I mean, Tyhark Orchard, you know, we know that it's possible to kind of interact with NPCs.
Freaking
with
Lumo. Sorry.
So
it's like
hey,
me jerk.
Oh, by the way, I need you to help me with that mission later if you can.
I hate you. You know what? I'll tell you what. The best thing to do: go to AD1. And open your party search window and just LFG.
Okay,
81 in Tyhark is usually pretty crowded. You should do fine. Let me know how it works.
Okay, I'll try that.
Because I'm really busy today, but try that, and I think you'll do good.
Cool, I hope I get someone to help me with that.
I'll be over there in the corner watching.
We are dorks.
it's great.
So, I think essentially it's possible, but we don't know for sure, right?
Right. But you know what, the emotes, something that I noticed in the demo that was so cool, when your character's just standing around, she'll randomly emote.
Yeah.
She'll like kind of fluff her hair, maybe yawn and stretch. So they're doing more with emotes. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it would be an interesting little thing. I mean, like you said, you could see all these people kind of standing around doing this stuff. And I don't know. I think they have the foundation in there already to do something like that.
Yeah, absolutely so. There. Again, I just don't, I don't know how much is involved in the back end of that, so.
Yeah.
Also, I'm stuck on the mental image of you standing on Embark Beach trying to get a group for TyArk. How many people could we get to make fun of you all at once?
Oh, man.
So anyway, yeah, I think it's absolutely possible. It would be so cool.
Yep.
My worry is how would this NPC deal with tons of people?
Yeah, I mean, he would get really tired, I'm sure.
He'd start just waving with one finger after a while.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and wrap this episode up. We are doing a long episode this time, and we didn't get through all the emails, so if you wrote in, we'll try to get to those next time. And speaking of next time, I will not be here next week. I will be in Korea doing G-Star Convention for Massively. And actually, the NCSoft PR people will be there for a different game, Blade and Soul, which is, another...
another NCSoft game.
Yeah, another NC. I was going to say that, and I'm like, well, that would be completely redundant. But yeah, you're right. And so it's... we will kind of meet with NCSoft out there, but, of course, Guild Wars is originally, NCSoft is a Korean company, so I guess there's that little tie in there for mentioning it. But yeah, so we won't be here next week, but we will the week after that. And if anything happens during that week, we'll probably record a little early, like once I get back and kind of, unjet lagged and all that
absolutely.
Stuff. So,
yeah. You know what we have to do, though, since you won't be here, next Friday is the 19th.
Wait, what's the 19th?
Guildcast's birthday.
Oh, man, I forgot about that. That is 5 years of Guildcast, and I will not be here.
And you're going to be in freaking Korea.
Oh, man.
Well, and you, what is I'll it, have... like 12 hours ahead of you? No, what time is it in Korea?
No, I really don't know. That's one of those things I plan to figure out before I leave.
You should probably do that. I was going to say, we're probably on completely opposite sides of the clock, and you won't even have time to call in and do a quick episode.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, but it's, we have to acknowledge that now then.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday, Guildcast.
Happy birthday, Guildcast.
Next week. Yeah. And actually, that's also Lady Sinea's birthday. Lady Sinea, who was on the original Guildcast. So happy birthday to her as well.
It's also my daughter's birthday, but I think less people care about that.
Probably. But we can say happy birthday to her anyway.
Happy birthday, Catherine. So there we go. Like she listens. She's nine.
she's gonna come up to you like after this episode airs, and she'll be like, "Thanks, Mom."
And I'll be like, "Why aren't you in school?"
Okay, yeah. So it'll be an exciting week next week, and hopefully, see, this is my prediction now. They're gonna reveal the Mesmer. I mean,
dude, they've got somebody at the airport. They're just waiting for you to get on the plane.
I know. They're gonna be like, "Okay, he's away from any microphone or internet connection. Go ahead. Reveal that Mesmer."
He went to airplane mode. Go.
So if that happens, just keep your eyes on Massively and watch Ruby freak out about it. And that should be good, right?
I cannot. Yeah, I'll just completely lose it. So, and you're going to have to email me like the second you land. Well?
Yeah. So how's that Mesmer? That's what I'll email you.
It's awesome. They let me play it. They were going to let you do it, but they couldn't get hold of you.
No. All right. So if you want to send us an email about how awesome the Mesmer reveal will be, you can go ahead and send that to Sean, Shawn, at guildcast.com, or Ruby, Rubi. Let me say that again, Rubi, at guildcast.com. We also have Twitter and Facebook. We have a little Facebook group going, and then the Twitter is where I usually announce when the new episode comes out. And you can check out Ruby's stuff at Flameseeker Chronicles every Monday, right?
Okay.
Every Monday at Massively. And so now that she's the community manager over there at Massively, she's all important and big shot, right?
I am. I'm a boss now. Wait, no.
So you can check that out, and I guess we'll see you guys in about 2 weeks. So until then, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And we'll talk to you then.